isn't a man doesn't make you gay.
WMFO Medford 91.5 FM. It is The Big Picture. Derek Gary and Lisa Nichols with you until 9 o'clock tonight. 617-627-3800 is the telephone number. 617-627-3800. Or find us on Facebook, facebook.com, Big Picture WMFO. Coming up later tonight, in addition to all of the great things that we do, like Did You Hear and What's Hot, and that's the thing that happened, we're going to be taking a look at the latest efforts to protect the children. North Carolina and Georgia and all of these stupid things that people are doing to try and protect the children, which apparently do not involve tying down their bouncy castles or behaving appropriately on Easter Sunday.
I think there should be more focus on that.
Yeah, and let me just say, this is the worst news week I believe we've had since, I can't remember another one this bad, Lisa Nichols.
Now, up in the few days leading up to the show, Derek and I go back and forth on show topics in our longer segments. You know, what would our listeners want to hear about?
Yeah.
And we're kind of stuck.
This is awful.
Like, oh, well, we could go there, but so many of the topics, we've done so much of. We've beaten them, you know.
Everything is over and over again. Everything is a 2-minute topic.
Yeah.
You know, and it's all sort of like, oh, here's this again, and oh, here's that again, and oh, more about Hillary's emails, and oh, more about Donald Trump's campaign manager. And it's like, they should just shut the news off.
If I had that power, I would.
Shut it off. Like, you know, CNN, shut it down, take a few days off, go to the beach, get your head together, and then when some news happens, call us.
Yeah.
You know, because it...
It's the same thing.
Yeah.
I mean, leading today was Trump said to punish any woman that wants to have an abortion.
Which is a stupid thing to say, by the way.
Oh, God.
That stupid. That one broke late, so I didn't get on it. What a stupid thing to say.
I mean, you need a crowbar to get his foot out of his mouth for that one.
Oh, man. Every day that goes by, it gets a little bit tougher.
I just want to tape up his mouth. You know.
Just don't say anything. You got the lead. Don't say anything.
Don't ruin it now.
Just talk about your stakes and how you want to make America great again and how the Chinese are smarter than our elected leaders, because that's a true statement. That's something we can get behind.
And you were getting a lot of people backing you at that point. Now you have to come out and start...
I mean, the thing about it is, it was a hypothetical situation.
I understand
because he said that on Hardball with Chris Matthews, and Chris Matthews said, you know, if abortion is banned, women should be punished. And Donald Trump was like, yeah, if you break the law, you should be punished. But it's still a bad look.
Yeah.
Because that's the only...
the way that the news runs with it.
Right. They're not
making it sound like women should be stoned to death if you decide to have an abortion.
It's still not.
But of course, he did a complete 180, and now it's the doctors should be punished. So,
well, that would make more sense if you're performing an illegal procedure versus getting a procedure that should be legal out of desperation because some Republican idiot went and banned it on you.
Yes.
Anyway.
So much more interesting news than that.
Did anything interesting happen this week? Because I'm having a hard time finding it. I really am.
Yeah. Well, in local news, we learned a new law eliminates license suspension for many drug crimes.
Oh, God.
On Wednesday, Governor Charlie Baker signed into law a bill that repeals most 1989 tough on crime measures that automatically suspends a driver's license of a person convicted of drug crimes. The bill, which was passed unanimously in both chambers, also waives a $500 reinstatement fee drug offenders had to pay to get their license back. Quote, as the Commonwealth takes important steps to battle substance abuse and re-examine our criminal justice system, I am pleased to sign legislation providing opportunities for those convicted of drug offenses and who have served their time to re-enter society, finding it to keep a job and support their families, Baker said in a statement. Now, if we look just to last year, 7,000 people were convicted and had their licenses suspended. Now, that was even if the drug conviction didn't involve operating a motor vehicle. So, I mean, if you were smoking weed, you got, you know, pulled over, found with an ounce. That is different than what we're saying here. You're walking down the street, not driving a motor vehicle, and you get convicted of carrying an ounce. Now, of those 7,000 people, 2,500 were only able to get their license reinstated.
Okay, but let's talk about what this really is. Because to get arrested for marijuana...
Derek, I'm using marijuana as an example.
But this is...
Let's say it's ecstasy.
This is what the government wants
cocaine.
You... This is what the government and Charlie Baker want you to think. Oh, we're going to let the potheads drive. And I don't think anybody has a real problem with that. But this is the thing.
No, I don't think they're saying that.
Marijuana is decriminalized in this state already. You can possess up to an ounce and it's just a $100 ticket.
Forget I used marijuana as an example. Say cocaine.
We're talking about, but we don't...
I'm talking about class A, B, C, D, and E.
We don't have a serious, as near as I can tell, maybe I'm just not hearing about it, but we don't have a serious cocaine problem in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts.
Yeah,
we don't have an epidemic of cocaine overdoses. We have a heroin problem in this state. And what Governor Baker is doing is saying to the people who have been busted for heroin, here's your driver's license back. Because what we need in Massachusetts is our roads full of heroin users. Because that's a good idea.
That's how you take it.
That's exactly what it is.
But what if you have
way to take it.
A minor conviction. Small traces of cocaine.
What about this guy that nearly beat his girlfriend to death over in Woburn over the weekend and then crashed his car under the influence of heroin? Because you shouldn't be driving when you're using the heroin.
But it's also not saying complete across the board drug convictions. They're talking about small amounts in certain substances.
Heroin is what we're talking about.
Is it?
Yes.
Though?
We're talking about heroin.
Is it on record as that? Because from what I understand, looking at the legislation, is that would not be included in it.
I don't see any exclusion for it in the legislation.
Does it say anything about it being in there? No, so we don't know.
Oh, it doesn't say anything about it not being in there. If we're talking about people who are, you know, get pulled over with magic mushrooms in the car.
I get what you're saying. And I agree with that. There needs to be some limitations to it. But if we're talking about small, minor convictions, then yes, absolutely.
I want clear assurances that we are not letting heroin users get their driver's licenses
back. Yes, and as do I.
And that, I'm not getting clear assurances from any of this.
But I am also not getting assurances that it is involved in that.
Maybe someone who knows the law better than we do, 617-627-3800, could set us up and correct us on this. But, you know, if the whole goal of putting heroin users in jail is to keep them from using heroin, You know what else will keep them from using heroin? Taking their licenses away so they can't drive and buy more.
Yeah, but if you look at statistics, Derek, these people are still driving.
By the way, I don't want crackheads on the road.
I don't want
crystal meth users on the road.
Uninsured drivers, unlicensed driver, call your local court. See what a majority of their court cases every single day are. They're revoked licenses and uninsured drivers. Why? Because people lose their license and keep on driving. You think just because I take away your license, it's going to stop you from getting behind the wheel? At least this way, you can now get your license back and you can get insured.
But those
people, you can now be an insured driver. Derek, are you okay with not having?
Those people that you're talking about are pathological. No matter what, they're like the DUI people that have 15 DUI convictions. They have an interlock device on their car, and they still find some way to get behind the wheel.
That's a whole other situation when we're talking about multiple convictions for DUI.
I'm saying if
it gets more insured drivers on the road, then yes, absolutely. Because these people that lose their license are going to drive anyways.
Exactly. But it will stop some people, not all people, but it will stop the majority of people, because the majority of people who get arrested...
Is it going to stop the heroin addict that really wants to get to his junkie?
Nothing's going to stop that guy.
Of course.
But the people who are in between, the people who aren't totally committed to getting more horse...
Now, what about the guy that made a mistake and got a year in prison because he had, you know, a few hits of cocaine on him?
That's a guy that should be afraid of going back to prison for getting arrested again, who will not go out and drive.
And he should be able to get his... What if he doesn't do drugs often?
Whether he does drugs often or not.
You cannot assume just because we have a heroin epidemic that Charlie Baker's coming out and saying, hey, druggies, junkies, here's your license back.
That's what I read it as. That's what this is. Until Charlie Baker says, no, we're not doing that. That's what this is. We're gonna give all the heroin heads their licenses back.
Logic. I know that really is a hard concept to understand here in the Commonwealth. Actual people in government.
Logic doesn't apply when we're talking about the Massachusetts government. They have none.
That's why I'm saying it's a hard concept for you to wrap your head around.
They're like you. They're like, what feels good? What feels right? Oh, let's be nice to them. They made a mistake. They'll be okay.
Oh, don't give me that.
We have enough.
You know that
we have enough problems on our roads.
I have
without
to look at
bending
it
the rules
in
for drug
users. Way that it's going to give more people of an opportunity to become a legal driver and get insured. So what if you get hit by an uninsured driver? You're screwed, Derek. But maybe that person
no, because I have insurance
without a license
that covers that. You
shouldn't have to pay for it.
You're living in fantasy land if you think getting a driver's license back is going to make a heroin user go and get insurance, because the money that they would spend on insurance, they would rather spend on heroin.
No logical person would allow somebody that got caught on multiple convictions of heroin then to be allowed to get their license back. That is not what this is saying. It says, in black and white, there are many restrictions to serious drug offenses.
And here's what I'm
saying. From what I understand, heroin is a serious drug offense.
And here's what I'm saying. When they pitch it as low-level drug offenders, everybody assumes we're talking about pot users. Pot users don't get arrested in this state anymore. You really have to piss off a cop to get arrested for marijuana in this state, or you got to have bales of the stuff in the trunk of your car. And if the drug mules want to get their licenses back, I'm fine with that, because hopefully they're not using while they're drug muling. They don't want to get pulled over, so they generally tend to be some of the safer drivers on the highway. But for everybody else, we're talking about meth heads. Have you ever been on the road in front of or in back of a tweaker? They are the worst. And you can spot the tweakers from a mile away because their heads are going back and forth the whole time.
I think they're
looking all over the place. They're shaking. You know. Their teeth are falling out. It's like, we cannot be giving the tweakers their driver's licenses back. I'm sorry. I hope the tweakers get better. I just don't want them on the road.
That's what I look like in the morning in traffic. So
yeah, but you don't have the shakes.
Like you can haven't had my coffee.
You can spot the tweaker shakes from a mile away. In national news, on a similar theme, President Barack Obama announced a series of initiatives that he hopes will help curb the nation's rising opioid overdose epidemic. Obama's initiatives include raising the cap on medication-assisted treatment patients from 100 to 200 per eligible physician, allocating $11 million to improve access to naloxone, which reverses opioid overdoses, $7 million for the Department of Justice to investigate heroin distribution, the creation of a task force to study mental health and substance abuse disorder, and $94 million earmarked for treatment at 271 community health centers across the United States.
I love these task force that they always create.
We're going to have a task force.
How about we just add that few million dollars into, because I very much like the $94 million that is going to these community health
centers.
That's
a great idea. Yes, I like the 11, they're going to spend $11 million bucks to make naloxone more available to first responders, basically. Mm-hmm. So police departments, paramedics, people that can actually save the lives of overdose cases, like the one-year-old boy that we had here in Massachusetts recently, who someone left some heroin sitting on the coffee table, and Junior got into the heroin.
Now, I mean, there are a lot of positives that I do like about this announcement. The emphasis on harm reduction, treatment, overdose prevention.
Yeah.
But another thing that I think the Obama administration really just forgets at, that they're still beholden on the criminalization of drug users. And I'm somebody that believes, and I do like, I have to say, I do like what Gloucester rolled out, you know, two years ago, where they tried a different method. And I mean, you can do these in the small community where they're saying, if you are a drug addict, don't go to the police. Come to the police station. We will help you. We will get you in the right treatment. The police shouldn't be your enemies. They should be help in this. I think you can do that at the smaller community level. On a larger, if we're talking about the city of Boston, I don't necessarily think you can do that. Now, if we talk about Massachusetts federal prisons, where I believe that there should be very strict consequences for big-time drug users. Not only drug convictions, but people, drug dealers, even more so for them. People that are convicted as a user in prison, I think a lot of this money should go to health centers within the prison. It's amazing how much money is blown in the prison system, but if the money was allocated to the right departments with more of an upscale mental health treatment, I think it could help.
Yeah, but in a perfect world, we're not sending these people to prison in the first place. That's distributors go to prison, users go to rehab. That's the way that we solve this. That's how you break the cycle of addiction and fix it. Because if you throw somebody in prison for 3 months or 6 months, which is pretty common first time, or because you're not going to prison on your first offense, but your first conviction, unless you've done something really stupid, you're looking at like 90 to 120 days
in prison,
90 to 180. And all that happens is you get out and you're like, I haven't had heroin in 6 months. I need some right now.
But you act like there is a sole role for a user and a sole role for a dealer.
There is.
Whereas in a lot of these situations, and we're talking about heroin, that crosses over. There is not only somebody that deals with it, but also is a severe user of it.
But that person is still a dealer, okay?
Oh, no, and absolutely. And those people should be in prison.
If
you are a dealer, it's not like you're going into prison and have never used. There needs to be treatment for that.
Smart dealers.
There needs to be a punishment for what you're doing.
Smart dealers don't use their own product. And really, one of the big issues that we have with this...
You think that's actually happened today?
Well, one of the big issues that we have with this is that we're not talking about dealers in the traditional sense. A lot of the opioids that are finding their way onto the streets right now are coming out of hospitals. They're coming out of pharmacies. They're being diverted by employees in those organizations.
Look at the nurses, cases that we were just talking about last week with Boston hospitals.
Nurses, doctors, pharmacists who have their own opioid problems who are grabbing the pills and then selling a few extra to somebody who wants them. Mm-hmm. Or the physician who's sitting there writing opioid prescriptions all day long. It's not a case where somebody's bringing a van of the stuff over the border and we can just sit there on the Mass Turnpike and pick up the van and stop the stuff from getting in.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the opioid...
No, I mean, we live in a society now in a day and age where there are so many avenues and so many uses of how it is being received. And as we know, it starts a lot of time at the painkiller level. You know, you get in an accident, hurt your back, you're starting on OCs, then you develop an addiction.
Yeah.
Then you get onto more hard stuff, and you find any way possible to get it.
Yeah.
Addiction is so debilitating.
That's why I never take the stuff, by the way. I've been prescribed it more than once, and I don't think I've ever taken one. No, I haven't. I've never. What was the stuff that I was guzzling the last time I had
Vicodin?
No, it wasn't Vicodin. Percocet. But that's not an opioid, is it?
Yes, it is.
Is it? Yeah. I was guzzling the Percocet.
Very much so is.
But I was guzzling the Percocet for the pain, and I didn't come away from that and be like, I want more Percocet.
Mm-hmm.
You know? They gave me oxycodone when I had that surgery, and I told them I didn't want it.
But generally what happens, we're not talking about you have an abscessed tooth and you need Percocet because they pulled your tooth, you know, for 3-4 days. We're talking about somebody that has chronic pain and is constantly taking something, or you're recovering from a surgery, so you're taking pain medication for a month,
yeah,
a month and a half, 2 months. I know somebody whose daughter broke her ankle and, you know, I think it was maybe just sprained, twisted. The doctor went, I think she was like 13, 14, prescribed her Percocet.
Yeah.
No questions asked, ready to have the pen out with the, you know, prescription pad.
You know what doctors...
That is crazy to me.
Well, you know what doctors did when I was that age back in the 80s and you broke something? They said, suck it up and deal with it.
Yeah.
You couldn't get a painkiller unless you were terminal. They didn't give you painkillers for anything.
You got a stick or something like it.
Yeah.
Wrapped it with gauze.
Yeah.
And you got a lot of ice.
You got a cast and a go home and try and stay off of it. That was it. That's what we got. And by the way, we didn't all wind up heroin addicts. And opioid addicts, because that's what the stuff does to a lot of people.
But it's so easily available to people now.
I am a fan of the medication-assisted treatment part of Obama's plan. Currently, there are about 30,000 doctors in the country that can prescribe for medication-assisted treatment, which is usually used together with behavioral therapy. So they don't just give you methadone. They give you methadone and you got to go sit in a room and talk to people about your problems all day long. The problem with methadone is that people just get hooked on that, and it's a substitute. Less dangerous than heroin, but still not good for you. The doctors are currently capped at 100 patients each, which means there is more demand for this treatment than there are doctors able to provide it. So by increasing the cap to 200 patients per doctor,
more people can be treated.
You've got the opportunity to treat more people, which helps. I don't know how you fix this one, short of telling the pharmaceutical industry, you can't sell the oxys anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Go make some higher strength ibuprofen, rot people's livers out, and deal with the pain that way. Give them codeine, give them...
Unfortunately, pharmaceutical companies will never change. And the bottom line is the dollar.
And that's
all it's about.
And that's one of the big...
Because everybody, you know, the executives of these pharmaceutical companies, they don't care.
That's another one of the major problems that you have here is
addicts.
That pharmaceutical companies are making bank on this. As I said last week, they don't care if the prescription is purchased legally or stolen. One way or another... They are selling a pill to somebody, and they're making money.
Do you think that they care, Derek, if you had that prescription of Percocet, you give one to me, two to this person, maybe make $20 off of that? No.
No. They don't care at all.
They're making their bottom line.
They've got their money for the Percocet that I bought, or for the Oxy that I bought. Liquid Percocet's pretty good stuff, I will say that. Makes you sleepy.
We do not condone.
Makes you sleepy, though. But the funny thing is, you know, I had really, really like mind-altering pain going on. And I didn't come away from that being like, oh, well, man, I need more Percocet. I came away from that being like, this takes the edge off the pain at least.
Well, that's the thing. When you take a drug that you actually need, the drug works the way it's supposed to.
Yeah.
So whereas you don't have pain, it just gives you this feeling of just your muscles are like, ugh.
Yeah.
There's no way to even describe it.
Puts me to sleep.
Yeah.
Puts me to sleep. And world news, Brazilian President Dilma Rousseff tonight finds herself more isolated amid a growing cry for her impeachment. The Brazilian Democratic Movement Party, a key piece of Rousseff's coalition government, announced late last night that it is withdrawing their support for her, taking with them 68 votes in Brazil's lower house of Congress. Without the Democratic Movement Party's support, Rousseff must now try to assemble a new coalition government and find enough votes to prevent an impeachment vote. Rousseff is under fire for her connections to a kickback scandal involving former President Lula da Silva, whom Rousseff recently named to her government, that centers on illegal payments made to government officials by the state-run Petrobras oil company. Brazil is in the midst of its worst recession in a century, and a Rousseff impeachment could trigger new waves of social unrest ahead of the 2016 Olympics in Rio.
Yeah, I mean, this is an absolute mess of what's going on. Essentially, this has been worsening for the past year, and I believe that this will have lasting political and economic, you know, ramifications. We're talking about the world's fifth largest nation, sixth largest in GDP power.
Can we talk about the over-under on whether or not these Olympics even happen at this point? Between the recession, the country tearing itself apart over Da Silva and Rousseff, and the Zika, this is a good time to stay out of Brazil.
It's not very conducive to a world celebration of sports.
I can't imagine a lot of tourists are like, boy, can't wait to get to Rio. That looks like a fun time.
Mm-hmm. Imagine a few years ago when they actually, it's a good amount of years ago, they announced it. And everybody was so excited about it being in Rio. Now everybody's like, I don't know. Can't go in the water.
Oh, you can. Just wear a hazmat suit. Don't drink the water.
It's bad.
Yeah. But this situation is not going to end well for Dilma Rousseff.
Now, the biggest question is, say here in the United States, why do we even care? As I said, not the sixth largest. They're the eighth largest, I believe. A political crisis in Brazil, and we're talking about a country that has the eighth largest economy in the world.
Yep.
I mean, put two and two together. That spells trouble.
We care because it impacts the number of Brazilians attempting to get into this country. It impacts, they're already dragging down the global economy to an extent,
mm-hmm.
although most of Brazil's international trade is within South America. They are an oil-producing country. They do have some say in what OPEC does, although they are not an official OPEC member. So part of this is the low oil prices hurting them. Same thing that's going on over in Saudi Arabia, where the low oil prices are hurting them, all of which was done to drive the United States out of the shale business. So you start to see how all of these things are interconnected. Poor economic performance in Brazil is generally bad, not just for oil prices, but for the global investment community. Because Brazil is one of those places where the high flyers were all investing tons and tons and tons of leveraged dollars, expecting massive amounts of growth out of Brazilian companies. Now that that's not happening, all that money is starting to flow over to India. It was flowing to China for a while, but China's got its own problems. They've oversupplied. They have too much capacity, too much inventory. They've overbuilt. They've got to clear that up. So it's good for India. It's really good for India, which is another country that's on this massive growth spurt. It is very bad for Brazil. And the last thing that we need in this country is increasing political instability in South America.
Mm-hmm. No, I mean, this is one of those stories that there are so many aspects of bad. It really can't get any worse. We're talking about not only, as you said, Zika, everything that's going on there. There is just constant economic inequality in that country. It's not great to live in many areas. But then you talk about Rusev and this whole scandal that's circulating with Petrobras. And we have, I think it's 86 people that have already been connected within the scandal. And more people are showing up. Now she names to her chief of staff somebody also a former president, what's his name, Lula da Silva. He also involved in this. This is political corruption 101.
The other thing to keep in mind is that
it's payoffs. It's
in the main continental part of South America. There are only two countries that do not share a border with Brazil. So if you have massive political instability in Brazil, you've now given the Colombian drug cartels a weak border that they can run back and forth across. You've given the revolutionaries and the counter-government forces in Venezuela a border that they can run it back and forth across. Ecuador, who knows what's going to happen with them, because they're very easily swallowed if you get massive amounts of refugees coming in. This is a big problem. This is a very, very big problem. So it's something that we want to keep an eye on. It's a story that's been bubbling under the surface as we talk about more important things like Donald Trump's campaign manager or Hillary Clinton's emails or Apple being upset that the FBI went behind their backs and found someone to crack their iPhone. Brazil is a big story.
You know, the political ramifications of what could happen, not only politically, but also economically.
Yeah.
On the global scale, it means a lot.
This is something, if you were listening to this show, that affects you, that is going to impact your life, and for a lot of people, is just sort of going to spring out of nowhere and bite them on the ass, and they're going to be like, what's all this about Brazil? Where did this come from? That's why you listen to this show, because you're way ahead of the curve. And your friends will turn to you and be like, please tell me what's happening. That's why we're here on WMFO Medford.
Well, today in sports, we learned concussions are not just a problem of the NFL. A U.S. federal court in Minneapolis has unsealed a trove of sensitive emails between high-ranking National Hockey League executives from 2011 acknowledging a link between fighting and concussions, depression, and personal tragedies. The documents were obtained by Canadian National Broadcast Television Network, CTV, and partitioning into court for their release. The emails date back to September 2011 when Brendan Shanahan, the then NHL's senior vice president and chief disciplinary, forwarded a Globe and Mail story about fighting in hockey to Commissioner Gary Bettman. The exchange came on the heels of the death of three enforcers, Derek Bogard of the New York Rangers, who died of an overdose, Rick Rippon of the Vancouver Canucks, and Wade Belloc of the National Predators, who both committed suicide. Gary Bettman's response to Brendan Shanahan and Deputy Commissioner Bill Daly began, quote, "Do you remember what happened when we tried to eliminate the stage fights?" Continued on, quote, "An interesting question is whether being an NHL fighter does this to you, I don't believe so, or whether a certain type of person who wouldn't be otherwise skilled to play in the NHL gravitates towards this job. I believe this is more likely." Not looking good for the NHL.
Except that I completely agree with that assessment.
It is.
Having watched the NHL my entire life, having been a fan of enforcers my entire life, because let's face it, they make the game interesting. If you see the movie Slapshot, they talk about it. There is a certain type of personality. The same kind of guy that, if he wasn't in a hockey uniform, would be down at the local bar every Friday and Saturday night, getting drunk to the gills and beating the crap out of anybody
smashing
that looked at him the wrong
bottle.
Way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And the NHL provided gainful employment for this personality type. And it is a personality type. So with this group of players, I don't want to say nobody tells you that you have to go in and fight in hockey, because with this group of players, that's what you're there for.
There's always, every team is known for, I mean, look at Thornton. He was our enforcer when he was on our team. And now we say, as Bruins fans,
he was good at it too, by the way.
Why are they so bad? Because we don't have an enforcer. We don't have somebody that you are going, you know, to check somebody. You know, get an awful call. The enforcer's coming in and beating the crap out of you.
Why am I forgetting his name? The great big tall guy.
Chara.
We have Zdeno Chara.
He tries to. No, he's such a wimp now. He does nothing, oafs around.
But if he shows up, anybody who's going to give anyone else a hard time backs off. Because only a couple guys...
He has not been in many fights lately.
I know, but only a couple... That's because no one's stupid enough to get into it with him. The guy has 6-foot arms.
But here's what's interesting. So later in the chain, the deputy commissioner, Daly, he responded, I tend to think it's a little of both. Fighting raises the incidence of head injuries, concussions, which raises the incident of depression onset, which raises the incident of personal tragedy. It's just a vicious cycle. What's interesting, though, is you don't normally hear concussion, CTE, all of this that's been swirling around the NFL in hockey.
You do, though.
You do a little bit, but it's really down low because we generally think, as the average person, this is more common in sports that use your head. Soccer, you're constantly... But we're also now dealing with a sport that you're constantly being hit into the boards.
Well, the thing with the NHL, everybody around here who's a hockey fan remembers Patrice Bergeron. Mm-hmm. And when he suffered his concussion and had to sit out for nearly 2 years. And he couldn't sit up. He couldn't walk. He had suffered a very, very serious head injury, and everybody knew it because it was on the news. My God, that guy's a mess. Is he ever going to come back? And he didn't. He played. Usually I think the fans expected that in the NHL, but they looked at it as, you know, that's a result of taking a really hard shot into the boards. That's a result of banging your head off the goalpost. That's a result of getting a puck to the head. Mm-hmm. You don't think about the kind of street fighting that you see in the NHL as being a major source of concussions. Yeah, people are, you know, throwing haymakers at each other and falling down on the ice, but it doesn't look as bad as somebody wiping out at full speed, mm-hmm. going head over heels over the boards.
Well, I mean, the story is coming to the forefront because we are just starting now. The NHL is currently they're fighting a class action lawsuit in Minneapolis. This is from former players, and the plaintiffs are trying to prove that essentially the NHL didn't even warn them about concussions or, you know, the effects of this down the line. Concussions, depressions, roughness, constant head trauma.
I don't think they knew. Obviously, in 2011, they knew, and that's what makes this a bombshell.
We have conversations going back and forth between the deputy commissioner, the commissioner, one of the VPs saying, we need fighting. That's okay. You're being realistic about what is getting people excited about your game.
Old-time
hockey.
But
now you're saying, back in the day, they used to take cocaine and drink. But now, they just take pills and pills and pills and pills to make them sleep, pills to make them feel better. So not only are you condoning drug use, but you're enabling because you're allowing it.
Back in the day, they'd get hammered, do a couple of lines of blow, and then go out on the ice without any helmets on.
Oh, absolutely. Look at Samuelson. He was an absolute disaster. He was basically blowing lines off his stick.
So all of these guys are out there.
He was a rock star.
Plowing into each other at top speed, beating the crap out of each other, taking pucks to the head, and for decades, it's not an issue. And the NFL, the NHL,
I know, we talk so much about the NFL.
I know, because I'm a football guy. The NHL may have gotten a little too complacent when they put the helmet rule in, mm-hmm. because that was a concession to safety. And they may have said, you know, everybody's wearing helmets now. This game is safer than it used to be, without ever looking at what was going on out on the ice. Because the game today is also a lot faster than it was 20 years ago.
Exactly the same way that football... People are bigger, people are stronger, people are faster. The same thing is going on in hockey. You don't have, you know, back in 70s, 80s, maybe everybody was 20 pounds lighter, not as muscular. You have these guys that are monsters. Would you ever think somebody like Charo back in the day would be playing?
If he could skate, yes. But you had a hard time finding guys that big. Mm-hmm. They didn't make them that big back in the day.
With any professional sport, every year, it becomes a bigger, better game.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, if you want to have a child that's going to be in pro sports, you better start feeding them HGH or something to make them into giant superhumans. They're the only ones that can play anymore. But between the complacency over the helmets and what I think, as I say, I agree. I think there is a very legitimate question about the type of players who are enforcers in the NHL. Whether or not they're good enough to actually make it on a team without their ability to go fight everybody and take punches. Because you don't hear about a lot of enforcers also being top scorers on a team.
No, in the game, you need to be a star. So if you're going to be star, whether you're going to be a goal scorer, a goalie, or an amazing defenseman, if you don't fit into any of those molds, well, you know what? There's an opening for the team to be the biggest badass that nobody is going to mess with. You're taking that role.
I've watched.
Because what do fans like? Fans like fighting.
Fans love
it's
the
fight.
Same
thing.
Old time hockey.
In football, when you have somebody that gets a monster hit and you can hear it from the top and everybody's screaming, excited. Same thing in hockey. You're disappointed when you're at a game and there is no fight. I got off the couch on Saturday night when Miller just nailed him. And even the commentating was like, he will end your life.
Oh, yeah.
You don't ever hit him like that because Miller will end your life.
I have watched Claude Julien send somebody out on the ice for the specific purpose
absolutely.
Go hit that guy. Mm-hmm. That's part of the strategy.
Well, it's that mentality in hockey. You mess with me, I'm going to get you back
but
double.
It's strategy. It's part of the game. Mm-hmm. You want to force power plays. You want to do... And yes, we cheer when we see the big collisions and we cheer in football when we see the big hits, but we cheer more when we see the players get up and go play again. You don't want to see the stretcher coming out or the cart coming out because, well, there goes my fantasy season.
How exciting is it in baseball when you see both dugouts clear?
Yeah. Oh, we love that.
Because it's a game that, as much as I love it, it tends to be slightly boring.
And name the last time.
Person.
Name the last time somebody got seriously hurt in a baseball fight.
Yeah.
Because what you got is 30 guys all run into a big clump, start waving their arms around, and hope they connect with something.
Mm-hmm. There's no 101, yeah.
Yeah, nobody's going to the hospital after these fights. But in hockey and in football, we're learning things now. And the things that we're learning are going to come back to haunt league officials because I'd say anybody before 2011, if they don't have any emails before then, you really don't have a leg to stand on because I sincerely believe it wasn't a case the NHL didn't care. I don't think they knew. I think they thought they were doing everything that they could. And as an NHL player, more so I think than an NFL player, you understand that there is the risk of traumatic neurological injury because we've seen guys get paralyzed. We've seen guys suffer severe concussions and be out of the game for years at a time. I think you accept some of that risk. And if you ask the average NHL player to rank the dangers of playing the game, getting into a fist fight at center ice is probably at the bottom of the list. Mm-hmm. They're way more scared about getting their throat slashed with a skate or hitting the boards the wrong way and getting paralyzed from the neck down. Those are things you can't ever take out of the game.
Okay, Travis Roy.
So if you accept that, and if NHL executives accept that, it's hard to make that case. If you got emails from 2011 where people are saying, hey, we think the fights are causing concussions and maybe some problems for the guys down the road, everybody who came in from that point on, you got a case.
Mm-hmm.
And the NHL, like the NFL, will have to settle.
Well, today in food news, we learned you will soon see a new label on some of your favorite edibles. Five major food corporations are on board to label genetically modified organisms, GMOs, on all their products. Campbell Soup was the first to announce in January, that followed by General Mills, Mars, Kellogg's, and Conagra Foods. The news comes less than a week after GMO labeling supporters in the Senate defeated the latest attempt at a bill that opponents have dubbed Deny American the Right to Know Act, or the DARK Act. The legislation would have prohibited states from requiring GMO labeling. Vermont, who is a leader on this, has already passed a mandatory labeling law scheduled to go in effect July 1st. In the last 4 years, major food and chemical corporations have spent hundreds of millions of dollars to fight GMO labeling in the state and federal level, including more than $100 million to defeat state ballot initiatives. So now at the bottom of your Campbell's soup, you are going to have just a little label, GMOs.
That everyone will ignore because they'll try and make it as small and obscure as possible.
Yeah, the markups for it are pretty small.
What they really should do is embrace it and just have a big label on the can that says, the extra genes make it extra tasty. Because then people would say, oh, I like the GMO product better than the non-GMO one.
Of course. And of course, this is coming from consumer demands. And this consumer pressure really has had an impact on, I think, brands' decisions to label it. But I mean, before everybody gets all excited, four out of the five companies didn't announce this till after Senate said, we are now going to require you to do this.
Right.
So it's kind of like well, we're going to have to do it anyways, but let us come out and put a press release and make us look real good because we care about you, the consumer.
Because
we care about our product.
Because they know there is going to be a massive consumer backlash to GMO foods because most Americans are very ill-informed about what GMO foods are. They think if they eat them that, I don't know, mutant wheat is going to start growing out of their innards or something like that, or they're going to be poisoned by them or whatever ill-informed fears they have. Europe has banned GMO foods. There are reasons to be opposed to the GMO food industry because you don't want Monsanto owning your wheat. You don't want Monsanto...
Wait, you don't want your wheat being sprayed by chemicals constantly?
That's not a problem. The problem is taking something that occurs in nature and then deciding that you're the only one that can supply it. That is bad for consumers. GMO technology in and of itself is not a bad thing. It is the profit motive and the large multinational companies that are exploiting that profit motive that make it a bad thing.
Well, essentially then what you would have are a monopoly on products.
GMOs ultimately cost consumers more because it costs the farmer more to comply with all the rules that you have to follow to grow GMO foods. Whereas it would have made more sense for Monsanto to develop the Roundup resistant wheat and just release it to the wild, knowing that people would buy more Roundup.
Now, it's interesting.
That wasn't good enough for them.
Because Bernie Sanders was one of the people to really back this. This is coming out of Vermont and why it's on the foot of Senate. He's really pushing it.
I agree with it 100% because consumers have a right to know.
Oh, absolutely. And we've been seeing it a lot in this trend going on with, you know, your fast service restaurants, should I say. So Panera has been on top of this. Yeah. Chipotle. I mean, look where that got them. They have their own issues. But a lot of these companies are now starting to understand what consumers want. Consumers want to be more knowledgeable about what's in their food, how it's being made, how it's being processed.
Yeah.
Well, we should have the right to know.
Consumers want food with less processing. And the reality is GMOs don't add anything to the amount of processing in your food. The food is still processed the same way. The ingredient is slightly different. But it's not like this is some kind of lab-grown wheat that, you know, that automatically transforms itself into a wheat thin when it reaches maturity. That's not how
wheat thins.
It's still wheat. It's just wheat that can't be attacked by a certain pesticide. There's way too much hysteria around it that is focused on the wrong aspects of this. Is it organic? Is it natural? No. But if you look at it across a multi-millennium timeline, is it possible that wheat would have gotten to this point anyway and we just hastened it along? Absolutely. You know, we haven't turned wheat into a pear, and we haven't turned beef into chicken. We're working on that. We're working on growing meat in labs now.
Mm.
So your next steak may come from a lab. That's creepy. I don't know that I want that.
I'm good on that. I'll stay away.
Yeah, I don't know that I want that. I don't know that that's ever a good thing because I think that might actually come back and have a lot of serious unforeseen consequences and problems for us But the genetically modified plants that are out there, they're not a threat. If you want to eat organically and you want heirloom wheat, by all means, go for it.
You know? Have heirloom wheat.
But if your favorite product suddenly has a GMO label on it, don't freak out. It's not that bad.
You've been consuming it for this long, so
that's
I think you're
that's
good.
The thing. You've been eating it all along.
How long have we, yeah.
And, you know, like I say, I completely support the right of consumers to know what's in their food. And if people have an issue with GMO foods, by all means, don't buy them. But I would encourage anybody that's freaked out about GMO foods to go and learn about them and understand, because you're right to be concerned about GMO foods, but not for the reasons that you probably are. Not because they're going to hurt you.
People hear the word, because it's a buzzword. It's, a, you know, GMO is bad. Just people aren't informed about that.
It's like the people that think the mumps vaccine causes autism.
Yeah.
Low information, you're never going to get through to them. You can put science in front of them all day long.
Doesn't matter.
And no, somebody who was later discredited because it's all a big global conspiracy said vaccines are bad. Speaking of technology, the world of tomorrow could be arriving at your door this week. Shipments began Monday of Oculus Rift, the first consumer virtual reality system, which comes with a $599 price tag and an Xbox controller. Only about 1% of American households have the personal computers necessary to make Oculus Rift work. And while analysts project sales of up to 1 million units by the end of this year, they also believe the device will be overshadowed by Sony's PlayStation VR, which costs just $399 and works out of the box with any PlayStation 4 console.
Now, you actually talked about this when they were developing it.
Oculus Rift has been in development for nearly a decade now. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is not new technology. Facebook owns a big chunk of it. And someday down the road, maybe we'll one way or another.
What are the highlights of what you can do with it?
Porn, really, is what it comes down to. Virtual porn, they think, is going to be the future of the Oculus Rift.
Really?
Yes. Which leads me to a future.
So, I'm just trying to wrap my head around this. So you put on this contraption, yep. Like a helmet, sort of.
Yeah, it covers your eyes.
Okay.
It's got screen. It's got two separate screens in it that are 4K resolution.
Okay.
And you've got headphones over your ears, and you are in the world.
Now, when you say porn, would you be a character in it? So would we have to start creating new porn with just one person
They're already working on it.
Of course.
And
they are.
It's actually two people. So you kind of have to visualize yourself as the hunky guy that the porn girl is doing things to.
So it's a point of view porn.
Yes. And you can look around the room and she'll tell you how manly you are. And but that's just what they've done now. Someone will come out with the complete computer-generated porn simulator where you have a virtual woman that you can do whatever you want with.
I'm sure the Oculus Rift should come with a 3D printer.
Someone will come out with the virtual reality porn Tinder, where you can go online and meet up another user, and both of your avatars can go at it all night long. This is coming.
Derek, you sometimes put in my head just the most frightening thoughts of where our country is going, where the world is going. I mean, society, I've lost so much hope.
Here's a question that you are going to have to answer someday, so we may as well ask it now. Would you rather have virtual reality sex or sex with a robot?
Oh, God. I don't know.
We're gonna be able to make that choice.
Yeah.
You can make that choice in crude ways now, but that's gonna be a legitimate thing.
I mean, essentially, women use vibrators, so.
No, but I'm talking about like a.
No, but I'm saying we use devices.
Yeah, but I'm talking like Blade Runner Nexus 6 level sex android walking around.
The sex android. Darryl, if it has the functions of
Daryl Hannah.
I can't believe I'm a professional, Derek. I'm not talking about my robot sexcapades that I might have in the future.
I'll just say this is...
I mean, I am forever single, so...
This is a legitimate question that people are going to have to ask in a few years. Oculus Rift has a lot stacked against it right now. It costs a fortune to get the thing to work because you got the $600 for the VR headset and the controller, but then you need $3,000 to $4,000 worth of computer just to run stuff to get the Oculus Rift
when
to give you
the
best
words,
experience.
Virtual porn.
Yeah.
Money is not an object to people.
Not for some people. But right now the Oculus Rift is really for early adopters. The PlayStation VR is really just a glorified gaming experience. It's not going to be anywhere near the resolution or experience of the Oculus Rift, but it is taking us a step closer to putting ourselves into virtual worlds where, at least for now, we can see and hear what's going on. The next step is being able to feel what's going on, and people are working on that.
I mean, one of the coolest things to imagine is for people that can't travel, what the opportunities for you could do.
Yeah.
One minute you can be in Rome and looking at the ruins, and then you can be, you know, in France staring up at the Eiffel Tower.
Go a step beyond that. You could be in ancient Rome as it was, mm-hmm. as a fully functioning society, and walk around in it and have sex with peasant girls. You could be in King Arthur's England.
But I mean, let's pull
it
back.
Having sex with peasant girls.
Let's take it back and say that it will be used for educational purposes. And now children, you know, of all ages in elementary school, middle school, can now go in ancient Rome to discover things, not for your crazy ideas.
I think the answer to my question ultimately is that people will have virtual reality sex because the best way to market the sex robot...
Can we start a social media app for this or something? Can we copyright it?
Yeah, we need like the virtual Tinder.
We won't be billionaires.
But here's the thing. The best way to market the sex robot is to create a virtual reality version of the sex robot so that you can try having sex with the sex robot before you spend $25,000 to buy the sex robot.
Try before you buy.
No why. There's no sun up in the sky. Stormy weather.
I don't know what to do with this weather. I really don't. Tonight, it's going down to about 40 degrees. It's going to be windy, as it has been the last couple of days. Tomorrow's going to be even more windy, but it's going to be near 70, so that's a plus. Friday, the rain arrives, and the wind continues. 40% chance of rain, mostly in the morning, high in the mid-60s on Friday, falling back into the upper 40s on Friday night. Saturday, rain, on and off throughout the day. The wind does die down a little bit, high in the lower 50s. Saturday night into Sunday morning, snow. Snow.
That April Fool's.
Yes. I said snow.
Told you that word was banned.
Mostly flurries and snow showers. However, there is a chance for snow squalls with minor accumulations, possibly in a town near you. Sunday, the temperature will not break 40 degrees, and the same will be true on Monday. When we have some afternoon rain and snow showers and temperatures in the 30s. So, make what you can out of tomorrow with the rain and the wind. Make what you can out of tomorrow with the wind and then Friday with the rain because we're being driven back indoors by the snow until at least the middle of next week. Boston weather. What are you going to do? WMFO Medford, when we come back... Did you hear other stories in the news right here on The Big Picture?
I'm Sarah Beck for the U.S. Department of Agriculture with a quiz. Round steak is considered a good economy cut. True or false? True. Round steak is not quite as tender and juicy as some other cuts, but it has very little waste and can be made tender. Let the USDA quality grades be your guide to the right cooking method. For more free information, write How to Buy Meat, Agriculture Radio, Washington, D.C., 20250.
I'm going to the hardware store.
Oh, will you pick up 800 lumen bulbs?
800 more flowers? The neighbors will think we're wacky.
Not flower bulbs, light bulbs.
Come on, Dad. Lumens tell you how bright the bulb is. We can replace our 60-watt bulbs with energy-saving bulbs that give off about 800 lumens.
So, we'll save money.
Right.
Got it. 800 lumens and more savings.
Lumens, the new way to shop for light. Learn more at energysavers.gov.
Welcome back to The Big Picture on WMFO 91.5 Medford. I'm Lisa Nichols with Derek Gary, and we are here with you every Wednesday night. And as always, we want you to be a